A Weekend with Jason Dacey replay from Money FM 89.3.
Inspiring interviews, Singapore stories here on Money FM 89.3. I'm with David Kuo. He is the CEO of the Motley Fool Singapore. He's a longtime Singapore resident. But, David, you've got a very rich and interesting exotic background. Your father was from Shanghai. You were born in Hong Kong. You've lived extensively in the UK. What do you feel? Do you feel honky, Chinese, British, Singaporean?
Well, first of all, let me kind of set the scene. My father is Chinese and my mother is English, right? So I belong to that very early group of people who were from mixed marriages.
Mm.
And I kind of grew up as a young boy kind of confused because I didn't know whether I was Chinese or whether I was English. And what made it even worse was my Chinese friends in Hong Kong saw me as being English, and my English friends in Hong Kong saw me as being Chinese, right? And so for a young boy, it is very confusing, or it can be very confusing.
I mean, Cantonese was your mother tongue, but yeah. You spent a lot of your education in the UK. Talk about that transition in your life.
It was kind of okay, but I wouldn't say that people were prejudiced in any way, but when I went to the UK, I suddenly no longer became a Brit anymore, right?
Mm.
As far as the English people that I went to school with, you were a Chinese guy, right? You were the little Chinese boy from Hong Kong.
Right.
And so they kind of treated me differently. And it was really that assimilation that I had to sort of come to terms with myself. And to sort of say, what am I? Who am I, right?
Right.
And then I decided that, yeah, I am different to everybody else. But at the same time, I have advantages because I can understand European culture and I can understand Chinese customs and Chinese culture.
Well, you educated at Imperial College in London, a really great institution. What did you study and how did that help your evolution as a young adult?
Well, I studied chemistry.
Chemistry, right.
I studied chemistry when I went to university. And the reason why I chose chemistry is because I love chemistry. I didn't see a career at the end of it. And today when I talk to young people and they say, what should I study at university? How can I be like you, David? You know, you work in the stock market, you're an investor. So what do I study at university to become an investor like you? And the answer is, nothing, right? The whole point is when you go to university, you mustn't forget that you're going to be spending 3 years of your life doing something. So why would you want to go to university and study, say, economics or to study accountancy when you hate economics and you hate accountancy, right?
But a lot of parents want their kids to be engineers or doctors. We see that a lot, especially in India, right?
Well, yes and no. When I have a look at the group of people that I was working with the Motley Fool in the UK, we had lawyers, we had engineers, we had me who was a scientist.
Mm.
We even had doctors working for us. Now, the point is, when you go to university, you've got to enjoy what you do for 3 years. I enjoyed it so much that I spent another 3 years to go and get a PhD, right? Because
right.
I enjoyed chemistry.
Mm.
And then my dad said, look, you know, enough is enough. You can't be a permanent student for the rest of your life. So you got to come home. And home then was Hong Kong. So he said, you got to come back and work in the family business. So I went from Imperial College, having got a PhD, went back to Hong Kong, and then worked in a factory.
Yeah, and that time was way before the big boom of, construction, manufacturing in China. What was that period like?
It was interesting. We could see the writing on the wall as far as Hong Kong was concerned. I mean, this was back in the late 80s, and Hong Kong was going to be handed over to China by 1997. So we knew that things were changing, and we knew that Hong Kong would eventually be handed over. So we gradually started to move some of our business to China itself to tap into what was lower cost labor. Because even though people think that labor is expensive in Hong Kong now, back in the 1980s, it was also expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And we could see, you know, that there were cheaper places to manufacture than Hong Kong. And ultimately, when you are running a business, all you care about really is the bottom line. You care about the profits. And if the profit margins are beginning to get squeezed because labor cost is too high, you go somewhere else. This is something I think, President Trump needs to understand that, Capital can move from one place to another very easily.
Definitely.
And just by slapping on tariffs on Chinese goods coming into America doesn't quite work because industrialists and capitalists are very smart.
Of course.
They can actually move their factory from China to another part of Southeast Asia within weeks and start manufacturing.
There's always a way around the system. We're speaking to David Kuo. He is the CEO of The Motley Fool Singapore. And, you know, you told me off air that you took an interesting diversion in your career in the late 80s where you became a bookmaker.
Yes,
and that was actually when I lived in the UK and you were working with Ladbrokes, who I'm very familiar with. And they were big. I can remember they were huge back in the late 1980s.
They still are pretty big today. Mm. I mean, I enjoyed it. And I think I was at that stage in my life where I didn't really have dependents. I didn't have children. And you could do whatever you wanted. And I kind of enjoyed... Can you actually enjoy gambling?
You're a chemistry graduate.
I was a chemistry graduate. And I do remember when I was doing my PhD in the UK, I started developing this interest going to casinos at the weekend.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
And I started working out a kind of system.
Wow. Is that right?
Yeah. So my time in university was very well spent. And I kind of worked out this system that I could actually sort of win in the casinos.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't entirely foolproof, but it kind of worked.
Mm.
And I used to go in with targets and I would say, I would like to buy this hi-fi. And I haven't really got that much money, so I would go to the casino, win enough to buy the hi-fi with cash, and then as soon as I hit my target, I would leave. And that really is the secret of, if you want to go gambling.
You know when to stop, right?
You have to know when to stop. Yeah, that's right. Mm. And you have to know when to stop in either direction. But anyway, going back to the bookmaking, I started to develop an interest in horse racing later on in my life, and I thought... Right. I wonder if I could actually work in that industry. And an opportunity came up, and I did work for Ladbrokes, and I worked for them for about 7 years.
And what about the transition into working for the Motley Fool? And that was in London, I believe.
It was, yeah.
Tell me about that.
It was around about the year 2000. Prior to that, I was running my own business, and it was doing okay. But... my business relied on myself. I was a kind of go-between between UK retailers and Chinese manufacturers. And this was pre-internet.
Yeah.
So the two places were completely separate. They needed somebody to liaise between the two. And because I spoke Chinese and I spoke English, I was kind of a natural.
Mm.
But I saw the writing on the wall because I saw this thing called the internet. And I thought, one day I'm going to be out of a job because they're going to be able to talk to
each
other.
It'll be so easy with the internet, right?
Without me, yeah.
And don't need the middleman.
And so I started to get interested in the internet and I came across this company called The Motley Fool. And I thought, wow, you know, they have a very fresh take on investing. Not like the day traders, you know, previously. They believe in this long-term investing thing. So one day I saw a job advert. They wanted an analyst working for them, and I applied, and I got the job. And that was around the year 2000, just before the dot-com bubble burst.
Great timing.
Well, yes, it was. Yes, and then shortly after I joined, the dot-com bubble burst, money dried up, and there was a lot of redundancies in the company. But I still maintain that the reason why I wasn't made redundant was because on the day, one of the days they made people redundant, I had a day off. So they they forgot about me, right? and after they retrenched a whole bunch of people, I was still there. Mm. Then they had another round of redundancies. Mm-hmm. And on that day, I also had a day off, right? So I managed to survive two redundancies.
I thought you don't go on holidays to not get fired, but then maybe it's an advantage to be off.
Yeah. So after two redundancies, we shrunk from a workforce of over 100 people to just about 25.
Wow. That's dramatic. We're talking to David Kuo, the CEO of the Motley Fool Singapore. You know, I first came across you driving in my car here in Singapore, listening to the BBC and hearing you as an analyst, as a news commentator, and, you know, really entertaining stuff that you used to give and you still give on the BBC World Service. And you're telling me that it was almost by default that you became a media personality.
Well, exactly. And it kind of ties in with the story about the redundancies that happened at the Motley Fool, because the dot-com bubble burst. There was chaos in the stock market, and we had retrenched a lot of staff at the London office. And then one day, the editor of The Motley Fool in the UK received a call from the BBC and said, we need somebody from your company to comment about what was going on in the stock market. And so Bruce came into the editorial room and he said, right, BBC wants somebody this afternoon. Who have we got? And then the sub-editor said, well, Bruce, you've fired all the people, you know, that were media trained. And so Bruce said, that's a bit embarrassing. I already promised them somebody at 6 o'clock in the evening. Mm. And so he said, who here is media trained? Nobody put their hands up. And he said, who here would like to go on radio? And most analysts tend to be very introverted. So they all put their heads down, pretending not to hear what he was asking. And then I put my hand up and I said, Bruce, I'll give it a go. And he went, are you media trained, David? And I went, absolutely not. So he goes, well, we have no choice, so you're going on. So at 6 o'clock, I went on BBC London.
Yeah, that's almost 2 decades ago. You know, it's more than a decade and a half ago. And yet it's continued on and on and on, and you've got a bigger profile. You know, it's, I guess, something that, you know, happened by chance, but now it's a major part of what you do, isn't it?
It is a major part of what I do. And even in those days, it was a major part of what I did, because I went on radio and I was completely green. I'd never been in front of a microphone before. And I do remember the presenter, Bill Overton, asking me, look, the stock market has crashed. People have lost lots of money on the stock market. Their pensions have been decimated. What is your response, David? And I said, Bill, why don't we just buy more? And he said, really? Buy more in this market? And suddenly the switchboard went completely red, right? Mm. People were phoning in and saying, who is this nutcase on the radio saying, buy more? The market has just crashed. I mean, it's the end of the world. And he's saying, go and buy more. And I said, well, that's the truth. I mean, when the market is down, you go and buy. And so anyway, when I came off air, the producer said, we've never seen a switchboard like that before. Can you come on tomorrow? And so I did. And then after tomorrow, she said, can you come on tomorrow? Before I knew what was happening, I was on every day of the week. And then shortly afterwards, she said, oh, we have an afternoon show. Would you like to do that as well? And I said, okay, yeah, I'll do the afternoon. Then she said, we have a breakfast show. So I was on breakfast.
Working
afternoon.
Around the clock there.
Well, I was spending more time at the BBC than I was at the Motley Fool.
Wow. And 5 years ago, you moved back to Singapore with the Motley Fool to set up the Motley Fool Singapore, mm-hmm. you know, after being in the UK for a long time. And of course, we didn't mention that you actually were here in Singapore many years before that. So talk about that experience of being in Singapore, I think 1980, and then coming back so many years later, although you had visited in the interim.
Well, as I said earlier on, I was born in Hong Kong, and when I was about 11 years old, which was about 50 years ago, my dad decided to start something in Singapore. So he started a factory here in Singapore, and he moved his entire family. So there was me, my two sisters, my mother, my grandmother, and so we came to Singapore.
What was it like then?
Oh, it was beautiful. Oh, it was like paradise. There were swamps, there were trees. Opposite where we lived in Bukit Timah, there was a kampong. It was really, really sort of quite idyllic, completely different to Hong Kong, which at that time was already a concrete jungle.
Right.
And so to move from an apartment to a landed property here in Singapore, it was great. Mm. And so I enjoyed my time in Singapore, and I went to a local school here, made lots and lots of friends, and I loved my time in Singapore.
But coming back, you know, I know that you, as we mentioned, you'd come back many times back to Asia. But to be back in 2012, 13 yeah. again after being here in 1980.
Yeah.
Talk me through that.
It was fine because, I mean, I came back for a purpose. I mean, I came back to start a company. So I was totally focused on getting the Motley Fool up and running here in Singapore. And I knew it was going to be a tough job because the Motley Fool was virtually unknown here in Singapore. And so it was a kind of trying to find all the skills that I had in order to get the Motley Fool up and running. And so we had the website up. We had nobody reading our articles on the website. We had no subscribers, no members, nothing whatsoever. So it was a gradual process to sort of build a profile of Motley Fool Singapore. And most of it was really, you know, thanks to the media. So I knew that was one tool I had in my box that I could rely on. So first of all, it was BBC. Then it was CNBC. Then it was the other media outlets, and gradually we started to sort of build the readership up. And it was almost as though I was spending 24 hours a day trying to build a business.
But and doing the media stuff has helped a lot.
It does help, and I think people sometimes underestimate, you know, just how important the media is. They think, oh, all you need is go and put adverts on the internet, and that'll be enough. That is one part of it, but ultimately, you still need the traditional media. You still need radio, television, newspapers, in order to reach a wider audience. If you don't, then you're actually sort of missing out on a very big part of. It's almost like I'm doing an advert for you, you know. But it is a very big part of you need joined up thinking. Mm. You need to be able to tap onto virtually all the channels, because people consume news in different ways these days.
So how do we find out more about you and the Motley Fool Singapore?
Well, we're at fool.sg, which is www.fool, that's Foxtrot Oscar Lima, F-O-O-L.sg. And that's our website here in Singapore.
Well, David, I know we're going to see a lot of you here on Money FM, but thank you for sharing your incredible story from Hong Kong to the UK, Singapore, back to Singapore, right here on Money FM.
You're very kind. Thank you, Jason.